We're going to cross over to South Lebanon, Nabatieh, where the head of the Secretary General of Hezbollah is speaking, Said Hassan Nasrallah. Let's listen up.
I congratulate you on these days which coincide with the day of victory. On this day in the holy month of Sha'ban, the occasion of the anniversary of Hussein ibn Ali, his birth. He still has an impact up until today. Also, the birth anniversary of Zain al-Abidin, may peace be upon him. He who was not stopped by those who imprisoned him. Also, the birth anniversary of Abbas, son of Ali. He whose wounds did not stop him from continuing the battle until the martyrdom of victory, and in the last days, the birth of Imam Mahdi, may peace be upon him. The upcoming hope, the promise of God, which will be fulfilled, God willing. At the beginning of the speech, I salute all of those who, after God's help, it was them who brought about this anniversary, this occasion, this victory. All of the martyrs and families of the martyrs, all the wounded and the families of the wounded, all the prisoners and the families of the prisoners, all of the resistance fighters and their families, all of our people, all of them who stood with steadfastness and put up with the displacement and the bombings and destruction for years, for long years, and all those who laid the foundations and led this march from Imam, the leader, Sayyid Musa Sadr, may God bring him back to us together with his two colleagues, and also Sayyid Abbas al-Musawi, the Martyr Sayyid Abbas al-Musawi, and the Sheikh of the Martyrs, Sheikh Raghib Harab, and the Commander Imad Bughniyi, all of those who supported this resistance, whether it be by what they said, or with money, or by weapons, or equipment, or prayer, or words, and also to the free, loyal friend, to the two loyal friends, the Islamic Republic of Iran, its leadership and its government and its people, and also the Syrian Arab Republic, its leadership, its government and its people. Brothers and sisters, at the beginning, I would like to talk about the current period, but we'll go back to that period as well, the liberation. We have to learn lessons from what happened during liberation, because what we're witnessing today is history repeating itself. However, under different names, under different themes, and also in order, because there are generations who don't recall what happened, the young women and the young men who were born in the mid-80s and 90s or 2000s until today, we want them also to know what happened. And we also want them to learn and take advantage, because they must understand the challenge of taking the upcoming responsibility, understanding the responsibility of facing the challenges. First of all, when the invasion of 1982 began, the Lebanese people disagreed in understanding this issue, in identifying the matter. Some Lebanese, if we want to speak frankly without naming, because everybody knows all the details, but only to remind, to refresh the memories, some of the Lebanese from the beginning had a clear understanding, identified the issue correctly regarding the Israeli danger, the Zionist project, and also the goals of the invasion in 1982. They did not believe what was being said here or there regarding these goals. However, it's very unfortunate that there were other Lebanese who were on a completely different side, at a completely different level. Some Lebanese, on the contrary, some Lebanese were pinning their hopes on the Israeli invasion. They pinned their hopes on this invasion. They cooperated with it at the security level, at the military level. They also entered into areas with the Israelis to occupy them. They put up checkpoints. They participated in the arrests. And actually, they were part of the same project. And some of those Lebanese also completed this assistance for the Israelis, and they continued their assistance even until the 25th of May 2000. Another part of the Lebanese didn't view that the invasion of the enemy posed any problem, but they expressed sympathy and they expressed understanding. However, they did not collaborate. We had yet another group which believed that there is no problem. However, they didn't show any sympathy nor cooperate with the Israelis. And also another group which was completely standing aside. They didn't understand. They weren't concerned with understanding or not understanding, neither the past, present or future. Their main focus was on their own personal problems to solve them. However, there was another group as well which took a clear decision. This group had an understanding of the dangers and the goals, the far-reaching goals of this invasion, and based upon this understanding, this group took a stance and it had the will, and all of this was translated into action on the ground, resistance action at all levels. Now, there were some who participated with the resistance regarding understanding the issue and identifying the matter. However, they didn't take any steps, these people, because they were convinced that they were incapable of bringing about change. And what has taken place, what has been done. But those who believed in resistance and walked on its path and practiced resistance in word and in action, they also had faith in the capability of bringing about victory and inflicting defeat. And they also were convinced that what was taking place was not fate, was not something that had been done. Results are related to the will of the men. And from here, the resistance was launched from Beirut, the capital, to Dahiya in southern Beirut, to the mountainous areas, to Mount Lebanon, to Sidon, to all of the south, to the western Bekaa, Rashaya. And it continued. Ever since the launching of the resistance, this is the first point. The second point is that ever since the resistance was launched, the Lebanese were also divided in the political stance and the media stance. What they express, the stances they express, or what the media outlets, different media outlets, what they say in expressing these stances. It's related to the first division. And here, I would also like you to recall what is taking place today. Some said that the Israelis, or spoke of the Israelis as if they were friends, as if the Israelis were allies. And some even viewed the Israelis as saviors. Some also, when they wanted to speak about the Israeli attacks on the Lebanese and on the Palestinian camps and on all sides, they used to speak about justifications. They used to provide justifications for Israeli attacks and hold the resistance responsible and consider that what the Israelis were doing, the poor Israelis, between brackets, is only a reaction to the attacks of the resistance. Don't go ahead with operations, and then Israel won't react. Now, some political and media stances from day one, they used to express doubt regarding the resistance and its decision and its path and its futility, and they tried to speak so lightly of its achievements. The Zionists themselves, however, spoke very much about the resistance achievements, but some here used to speak a lot, exaggerate the losses of resistance and the repercussions of its jihad. Some also accuse the resistance in its patriotism. Some tried to describe the resistance as mercenaries for Iran or Syria. Some also provided cover for the Lahad army and the spies and expressed sympathy with them and defend them. However, on the other hand, we had some who supported the resistance politically and in the media and at the popular level and relied on resistance and defended the resistance and pushed the resistance forward until the day of victory. This was the political and media picture from 1982 until May 2000, the day of victory. Now, in light of this, the third point, in light of the will and determination and identifying the problem, in light of all this, the resistance was launched in all its different factions. The Amal movement, under the title of the Lebanese resistance, Hezbollah and other Islamic factions under the title of Islamic resistance, different national groups under the title of the Lebanese Resistance Front. In addition, we had the Palestinian resistance factions from various groups which existed at that time in Lebanon. This resistance, in all its different factions, and only in a period of 3 years, and in confronting the Israeli army, which placed 100,000 generals and soldiers in Lebanon and which was supported by tens of thousands of the multinational forces and tens of thousands, unfortunately, of the Lebanese who worked as spies and collaborators. The resistance, in a period of only 3 years, was able to inflict defeat on Israel and impose on Israel without any condition, and this was the first victory it imposed on the Israelis to withdraw from Beirut and southern Beirut and Mount Lebanon and the coastal areas and Sidon and Tyre and parts of the western Bekaa and Rashaya, reaching up to the borderline, what came to be known as the borderline ever since 1985. And these facts proved the efficiency and the capability of the resistance to achieve victory and liberate territory. However, regardless, the political and media behavior, which expressed doubts and stabs in the back, it didn't stop even on the eve of May 2000. Now, after the consecutive Israeli withdrawals to the borderline, the resistance continued its operations from 1985 until 2000. Great sacrifices, martyrs, wounded, prisoners, destruction, very large confrontations, a war in 1993, in April 1996, until we reached May 2000 and the humiliating defeat of Israel without any preconditions, without any achievement, without any agreement, without anything whatsoever. And it was a clear, strong, pure victory. Let's be frank. This victory, after, of course, God's help, some Lebanese enabled this victory to take place. Put lines under some. Put some lines under the word some. Some Lebanese. Why should we kid ourselves? Those who believed in the resistance and its option and who practiced resistance and supported it, and support only from Iran and Syria, and sympathy, yes, from many of the good-hearted people amongst the Islamic and Arab masses and the free people of the world. However, this group of Lebanese, which brought about this victory with the blood of its martyrs and with the blood of its wounded and with the sufferings of its prisoners in the prisons and with the pains of the families whose properties and homes were destroyed and who were displaced and taken away from their homes, this group of Lebanese, it is the one which brought about victory ever since day one. This group wanted the victory to be for all Lebanese. This victory which was brought about by some. This group wanted it to be for all from the beginning. From 1982, the resistance considered that it was defending all Lebanese and all of the Lebanese areas, all Lebanese land, and the dignity and honor and sovereignty of all Lebanese and the whole nation, all Arabs. And so therefore, all of the backstabbing and all of the spying, all of the betrayal, all of the doubts expressed, this did not prevent the resistance to present its victory to all Lebanese and all Arabs and all Muslims and all free people of the world, especially the Palestinian people, the people of jihad, who are standing with steadfastness. And in the end, he who has been enjoying from 2000 until now, he who is enjoying the blessings of this victory is all the Lebanese. Isn't that the truth? I don't want to speak about theories. My speech today is based upon facts, facts to be built upon. Their villages were restored, their fields were restored, their homes were given back to them, except for the Shuba farms and the Kfar Shuba hills and the Lebanese part of the Ghajar village. Their sons and their prisoners were returned back to them. Their dignity, their freedom was given back to them. They laid the foundations for the protection of their country by the deterrence, which is represented by the army resistance people. This was built in April 1996. In 2000, it was further stressed on and underscored in 2006, Lebanon's stance in the region and in the world, how the world views Lebanon. The enemy realized it has no place in our land, with our water, with our resources, to the extent whereby they lock the door behind them, although they still do have aims, although they still have threats. Yesterday, Ehud Barak was defending his decision of withdrawing in 2000. He said there was no use of staying in the Lebanese territories and the price paid of staying was very high, so they had no choice but to withdraw. And so we, via our will, we wrote what should have been written. This is something holy from God. This is the law of history. These blessings, the blessings of victory, which we are commemorating its 15th anniversary today, these blessings were not given to one group and not another, or one faction and not another, or one party and not another, or one religious sect and not another, or one certain area and not the other. Its blessings included everyone, reaching the Arab countries, Palestine, the general conflict with the Israeli enemy. I would also here, I must recall that the resistance, with all of its factions, it dealt in a very humane way with all those who made mistakes and cooperated with the enemy, from the agents of Antoine Lahad, and they also presented an Islamic way of dealing with these people, an Islamic and humane way. So therefore, some, for example, try and compare this resistance and its components or its factions to ISIL. A question: if these Lebanese, if this certain group of Lebanese, if this certain group of Lebanese didn't have this understanding of the danger and didn't identify the goals correctly, and if this group of Lebanese didn't have such a will and such determination and such resistance action, what could have happened? Meaning, if there were not resistance after Israel's invasion in 1982, where would the South be today? All of the South and Nabatiyya, where you sit right now, where would the Bekaa be? All of the Bekaa, where would Beirut be? Mount Lebanon, the North. Israel would have expanded throughout all of Lebanon were it not for the resistance. Where would the region around us, where would it be? What would the situation be? Where would many Lebanese be? You can only imagine. You can only imagine to realize the great blessings God gave to our people in Lebanon and to our resistance and to our people by giving them this freedom and this liberation and dignity. Today, when we look in the eyes of the people, even at the border, we see in their eyes reassurance, security, a sense of security. When we look in the hearts of the people, we see this great confidence, this strong confidence in their capability of deterring the enemy and cutting off the hands of attack and toppling all of the plots. We realize the greatness of what God has given us. In these days, these very same days, 15 years ago. So therefore, we must understand this blessing. We must be thankful for it, and we must preserve it, because we are in need. We are in need of it in the upcoming days of challenges and fighting against the Israeli dangers and the non-Israeli dangers in the future. So this blessing was because of this understanding and this identification of the goals and this correct choice from the beginning. Some of the Lebanese, that specific group of the Lebanese did not wait for the Arab League, nor did it wait for the OIC, nor did it wait for the Security Council, nor did it wait for the United Nations, nor for America or Europe or the West. No, that group of Lebanese relied on God and his capabilities, on its men, its women, its heroes, its friends, as well in Iran and Syria, and the resistance was launched from the very beginning, and it carried out the martyrdom, unique martyrdom operations, which shook the enemy and the confidence of the enemy, the confidence of the enemy in his army and capabilities. Brothers and sisters, today, history is repeating itself. Now, I will calm my voice a little. Today, history is repeating itself. Under different titles, the project threatening the countries and the peoples and the societies and the armies of the region is the Takfiri, slaughtering, brutal project which we are witnessing today. Now look at the difference. Today, for example, 24th of May 2015 is different from what was said 4 or 5 years ago. 4 or 5 years ago, if you wanted to speak about the ideology of these groups, their mindset, their culture, their intentions, we would have been accused of holding accountable only because of intentions. Let's put all of this old talk aside. Let's hold accountable based on facts now. The facts which we are all witnessing in Syria, in Iraq, in the Sinai Peninsula, in Yemen, everywhere. And yesterday also in Saudi Arabia, in Qatif. Today, if we look at the clearest example of this project, which is ISIL, of course we also have Al-Nusra, Al-Qaeda, they're all one, but let's talk about ISIL. Now, today, we are witnessing a project moving on the ground. We're not talking about intentions. We're not discussing in a security studies center. They are spilling blood, killing, destroying, raping, slaughtering. Today, all of the news from Syria is talking about 400 martyrs and victims in Palmyra who were slaughtered by ISIL after being accused of affiliation with the state in one way or another. And they expressed their brutality towards everything which is human and civil. ISIL represents the clearest example. ISIL also today, as we speak, ISIL is not a small group in one corner of the Arab world or Islamic world. No, it now expands. It's expanded. If we speak about the allegiance, It exists in Syria, in a large segment of territory, also in large territories in Iraq. It is present in the Sinai Peninsula, on the border with occupied Palestine, and it is fighting the Egyptians. It is also present in Yemen. It is also present in Afghanistan, in Pakistan, in Libya, in North Africa, in Nigeria, because Boko Haram swore allegiance to ISIL. And I don't know if I said Yemen, yes. And the day before yesterday, it expressed its presence on the ground in Qatif in Saudi Arabia. And it might also announce its presence anywhere, because it has followers of this ideology. And Nusra is the same, but the difference is al-Nusra is located to Sham in the Near East. A lot of efforts, of course, are being made to give it a new title, the Army of Conquest. There's no such thing as the Army of Conquest. It means al-Nusra, it means al-Qaeda in the Near East, in the Levant, in order for no one to be tricked. Now, based upon all of this, what should we and our people and our region, and we as Lebanese, because in the end I'm going to speak about Lebanon, what should we all do? Based upon what we have witnessed, also we must first of all understand the danger and the threat. Unfortunately, in Lebanon, Syria, Iraq and the region, there are still some who are putting their heads in the sand and saying there's nothing, there's no danger, there's no threat, everything's okay. Some are still standing in the middle, taking a neutral stance. And unfortunately, on the contrary, there are some who are supporting and are relying on and believe that these terrorist Takfiri groups are friends and allies and saviors, just the same as I said about Israel in 1982. And so therefore, they provide assistance and support to these groups. Today, we are up against the danger, brothers and sisters. In the past, armies used to come, groups, to occupy territories. But what was the goal? The goal was to seize control of territory, to seize power, to seize control of money, water. Now, in this new era, on oil, markets, political decisions. However, they had no problem for people to live in the country. Let them live, stay alive. Now, if they are from different religious sects, they have different ideologies, different traditions and rituals, what they wear, what they eat, there's no problem. But today, we are up against a danger which is unprecedented in history, believe me. It is unprecedented in history. The danger is targeting human existence, the existence of other human beings. I don't want to, in order not to speak about this book or that book, let's speak about the facts. Here we have Iraq in front of us. Again, what did ISIL do to the Sunnis? The Sunnis who did not cooperate with them. Or even the Sunnis who cooperated with them, nationalists or tribes or others, but rejected to swear allegiance to them. What did they do to them? We all know what they did to them. And what is it doing to them today in Mosul, Anbar, Ramadi? What did it do to the Shia? What did it do to the Christians? What did it do to the Yazidis? And they don't differentiate. Arabs, Kurds, Turkmens, it's all the same for them. Aren't these the facts? Massacres, 2,000, 10,000, slaughtering is continuing until this moment. The slaughtering is continuing. In Syria, isn't it the same? Sunnis, Christians, Alawites, Ismailis, Druze, what's the difference? And we are seeing the images or the new news from Palmyra, even between ISIL and the Nusra. Why did they fight each other in Qalamun? They issued statements accusing one another, meaning those who have the same ideology, the same mindset, and used to be of the same organization at the same front, confronting the same danger. But regardless of this, their religion is so low. They have no religion to the extent that instead of uniting to fight the resistance and the Syrian army, they fight each other. I'm not trying to advise them to fight each other, but I'm describing the situation. When they fight each other, they slaughter one another. When they take prisoners, we have seen their statements, when they take prisoners from the other side, they don't execute them with bullets, only by slaughtering. That is their slogan. We're coming to slaughter, we're coming to slaughter. So today, we are up against a project, groups, a danger which does not tolerate the presence of others. It is wrong, and I always said this before, it is wrong to say this is Sunnis against Shia, or Sunnis against Christians, or Sunnis against the other religious sects. No, not at all. This is a brutal takfiri force against all the peoples of the region. He who will survive is only he who accepts to live their way of life and accepts their ideology and swears allegiance to them under the threat of force. Only from the Sunnis, of course. The Sunnis, yes. There is something which differentiates them. If they surrender and swear allegiance to the Khilafah, they can, they might survive, maybe. Maybe. Some have not. But the others, no, it seems there's no place for them. Now, based upon this scenario, if anyone else has a different understanding, what can we do? After all of these facts have been shown, some say ISIL and the Nusra want change. They are reaction to the oppression of the regimes and the dictatorships, etc. Okay, sometimes you come and analyze the reasons behind a trend, and other times you look at the trend and you try and see what its goals are, its path, its results. And based upon this, you must take the stance. Everybody must sense danger. It's not a danger to the resistance in Lebanon. It's not a danger to a certain sect or part of a certain sect. It's not a danger to a regime in Syria or a government in Iraq or a group in Yemen. No, it's a danger to all. Nobody should put his head in the sand. This is the evidence. These are the events. The numbers are all in front of you to see. Now, that's first of all regarding the understanding. Now we go to the options. The first option which we must dismiss, I call the illusioned option, the option of illusion. Some believe that if we are silent to ISIL and al-Nusra, and if someday in some place, if they defeat, then our silence will protect us. But the facts say contrary. And also, some imagine that if they come, and if they describe ISIL and al-Nusra as revolutionaries and mujahideen and freedom fighters, and if they support them politically and on the media, then one day in a certain place, if they achieve victory, that will protect them. But also here, the facts say something different. In Iraq, there are groups which fought side by side with ISIL in Mosul and Salah ad-Din and Anbar. But when ISIL took control, it requested allegiance. When they refused to give allegiance, they were slaughtered. Clerics, tribal leaders, their women were also raped, and their money was seized. And they are the same people who fought side by side with ISIL against the Iraqi army. Who in Lebanon or in the region, he who imagines that by being silent or by speaking highly or praising those people, he will protect himself or his sect or his group? This is ignorance. It's not true. Now look at what they say about one another in the statements of ISIL and al-Nusra. Read how ISIL describes Nusra and look how al-Nusra describes ISIL. How do they describe one another? As people who, as killers people who don't live up to their promises. The most easy thing for either side is to accuse the other of being an infidel and to spill their blood without any trials. If there is a trial, the judge is ignorant, who doesn't understand anything about Sharia or religious teachings at the time where they allege they understand fuqh or religious jurisprudence. So my advice here, as I speak about the options to those who are silent or who rely on such an approach, revise your stances. You will be the first victims of ISIL and al-Nusra in a very calm way, in a brotherly manner, in order not to kid ourselves. The first victims in Lebanon of ISIL and al-Nusra will be the future movement and the leaders of the future movement and the MPs of the future movement. And everyone will fall a victim to ISIL and al-Nusra. I don't want to scare people, but we shall not kid ourselves. I'd like to ask the Christians in Lebanon, is the stance of this person or that person from the leadership of March 14 or the parties of March 14, does this give you a guarantee? Does it protect you? Does it protect you from being slaughtered, killed? Does it protect your women from being raped? Does it protect your churches from being destroyed? Does this give you a guarantee? Then they will say, we helped you, we praised you. In light of all these facts, I pose this question to all Lebanese and all Syrians, all Iraqis, all peoples of the region, to our brothers, our Alawites, the Druze, the Ismailis, the Yazidis, the Abadis, all of the different religious sects. In addition, of course, to those who could say that you're secular, their problem is even bigger. Who has a guarantee? And can we behave with these people in such a way, by pledges and talk? Let us put this aside, this heated arguments. Let's speak based upon responsibility. So we must not sit down and wait. We must take the initiative and take action and look for the means with which to confront. So sitting down and waiting, no, that doesn't lead anywhere. Regarding the options, first of all, some are looking for American protection. Now, I don't want to recall America's history or America's project and how America is playing with all the countries of the region and the countries of the Gulf by selling it weapons and stealing our oil and stealing our money and by ripping us apart and destroying us as people in the region. Let's put all this aside. Look at what happened in Iraq. After around 2.5 weeks, we have the annual anniversary for ISIL occupying Mosul, a large province which is many times bigger than Lebanon, and the Salah ad-Din province and the Diyala province, and also a part of the Kirkuk province and part of Erbil province and a large part of the Anbar province, and it threatened Baghdad. Look, a coalition was formed under the leadership of the US. What did they do? I don't want to speak politically or about intentions. What did this international coalition do? This coalition under the leadership of the US, what did it do? The number of air raids over a period of a year is a lot less than the number of air raids Israel launched on Lebanon in the July 2006 war, or on Gaza in the 22-day war, not in the 52-day war. What did they do? Did they force ISIL to leave? Did they break ISIL? Brothers and sisters, everyone knows, and the Iraqis know, that ISIL, with its tanks, with its vehicles, with its weapons, it is going from one city to another, one province to another, and from Iraq to Syria, and from Syria to Iraq, under the eyes of the US. He who relies on America in Iraq or Syria or Lebanon or anywhere, I say to him, Mosul will not be retrieved, but Ramadi will be lost. Ramadi fell just after about 1 year since Mosul fell. This is what happens to those who wait for the Americans. But the Iraqis who did not wait for the Americans, they were able, with their will, with their army, with their popular mobilization, with the call made by the religious cleric, by the coherence of their efforts, they were able to retrieve Diyala and the larger part of the Salah ad-Din province. And they also succeeded in retrieving and stopping this expansion, and they are capable of doing this. So he who waits for America, he won't go anywhere. Second, the Arab League, the Joint Arab Coalition, some can say, why should you do anything? There are Arab countries, a joint Arab force. Today, we are in the era of Operation Decisive Storm. This will protect Lebanon, will protect the peoples of the region. Really strange, such an understanding, really strange. ISIL and al-Nusra, who's supporting it? Who's supporting them ideologically, on the media, even on the satellite TV stations supportive of Operations the Decisive Storm? If you watch them, they have clear support. They speak highly of the victories of ISIL and the losses of those who fight ISIL and al-Nusra. Who's giving them money and weapons? Officially or unofficially, who's buying oil from them? Are those who we should rely on to protect us? Number three, the real correct option is for the Iraqis and the Syrians and the Lebanese and the Yemenis and all the people of the region to rely on themselves, to rise, to believe in their capabilities, to cooperate, to stand shoulder to shoulder, and to look for the real friends, the honest friends, to give them support and assistance. First and foremost, here we have the Islamic Republic of Iran. They must also realize that by vigilance and by will, they are capable of dealing defeat to this dark, brutal Takfiri project. They are not stronger than Israel, they are not stronger than America, and the resistance movements and the people of resistance in this region, they did inflict defeat on Israel and on America. So what is at play here is misleading, vacuum, confusion. We must come out of this and realize that by relying on our national capabilities, on our youth and on our armies, and by solving our disagreements and by solving the issues of disagreement in all these countries, because the battle is a battle of existence. It is the battle of the existence of Iraq and its people, the battle of the existence of Syria and its people, the battle of existence for Lebanon and its people. The same goes for everywhere. And in the battles of existence, we delay the other battles, the interests, the privileges, the reforms, democracy, I don't know what else, in all countries of the world. When we have an existential danger, the opposition stops opposing the government. It cooperates with it. It might even support the government in its options. Isn't it so? So today, our people, our countries are now in a battle, in an existential battle. So based upon all of this, based upon the understanding and the options, I say the following. And here, I will issue the stances. First of all, we call on all in Lebanon and in the region, we call on all to take their responsibility in confronting this danger, to come out, to stop being hesitant, to stop being silent, to stop standing on the sidelines, not to mention supporting these groups. I know some have their own calculations. For example, in Lebanon, March 14 in general has a problem, because now in Syria, indeed, we have the government of President Bashar al-Assad together with the Syrian Arab army, and we have ISIL and al-Nusra. Now, your friends, the Syrian opposition coalition, today none of them dares go to these areas which ISIL and al-Nusra controls, and they don't provide a guarantee to you. And so Their only fear is the victory of President Bashar al-Assad. Out of fear of President Bashar al-Assad's victory, they pin their hopes on ISIL and al-Nusra. But they should be afraid of ISIL and al-Nusra. In July, in the July war, July 2006 war, when some in Lebanon expressed fears of Hezbollah achieving victory, you remember back then. I remember that many discovered that Hezbollah and the resistance and all resistance factions would achieve victory, and they said, we are afraid of Hezbollah achieving victory. I said back then, also I made a speech on TV screen, I said, don't be afraid of Hezbollah's victory, be afraid of its defeat. And today I say, you must be afraid of the victory of those groups. Do not fear the victory of the others. I would like to ask you, let's also hear, speak realistically. If the Syrian government and those who support it, if they achieve victory in Syria, we provide a guarantee to all Lebanese. And I know that the resistance and the senior political leaderships in Lebanon, they have a very special stance. They have a very special place in the hearts of the Syrian government. And I can say, we will provide you a guarantee. But I ask, God forbid, if ISIL and al-Nusra achieves victory, do you give any guarantee to yourselves before you can give a guarantee to the other Lebanese? I wish that you could give us an answer to this question in someday. Number two, it is wrong to say that this battle with these terrorist groups on the Lebanese borders and inside Lebanon, like what is happening in Arsal, it is wrong to say that it is the fight of Hezbollah and Hezbollah was to drag the state and the army into this battle. No, based upon this understanding, the state should take complete responsibility for this confrontation. We don't want to drag you. We call on you to defend your land, to defend your country, to defend your sovereignty, to defend your people, and to take this responsibility, not to run away from this responsibility. Number three, the fight in Qalamun is continuing. It is continuing, God willing, and it will continue until the Syrian Arab army and the popular defense committees and the resistance fighters are capable of securing all of the Lebanese Syrian border areas, God willing. This is on one side. On one side. On the other side, and this is the fourth point, we still have the issue of the Arsal village and its outskirts, because practically speaking today, out of all the Lebanese border areas, out of all these territories, all of these territories are outside the control of the militants except for the outskirts of Arsal. Regarding Arsal, the village, I would like to say, frankly, the same terms which I used when the car bombs were being sent from Arsal were coming through Arsal, and people from Arsal, men and women, were driving them. They are now in prison, being tried by the Lebanese judiciary. Back then, when our blood, when our flesh and blood was being torn apart in Baalbek, Hermel, Nabi Uthman, Southern Beirut and Bir Hassan, we said that the people of Arsal are our people, our brothers, our beloved part of our people. And so nobody should speak with, talk with us, argue with us regarding this issue. We don't accept for them to be harmed. We don't accept that anyone would behave with them irresponsibly. And here we must express our pride of our people in Baalbek and Hirmel, despite the fact that some of these groups, including some from Arsal, killed youth from the tribes and families of Baalbek and Hirmel. However, despite this, the people of Arsal remained living in peace and security. This is the correct ethical behavior expressed by the people of Baalbek and Hirmel, with those who were sending car bombs and killing their women and children, slaughtering their men. The issue of Arsal, this is how we view the people of Arsal. You say this is the responsibility of the state. Okay, good. It's the responsibility of the state. We said it's the responsibility of the state. So go ahead. The state, the Minister of Interior in the current government says Arsal is occupied today by the armed groups. Okay, you're saying it's occupied. The Future Movement, your minister is saying that it's occupied, except if you disagree with him. So let the Lebanese state come and retrieve its occupied village and the people of this village who are under occupation, the people who are being kidnapped, killed, slaughtered. And you know, in Arsal, there are courts that have been established, courts for ISIL and al-Nusra. They hold trials, they kill, execute, they say this person ate this, drank this, said this, and they hold trials. Isn't this so? Everybody knows it. So go ahead and take responsibility and prove that you are a state and a government that cares for its people's sovereignty, land, and its decision. And do not run away from discussing this issue in the cabinet. A number of the ministerial blocks, or the of these ministerial blocks, want to discuss this. The least is that you accept discussing it. If you don't want to discuss, go ahead, take a decision. Regarding the outskirts, and my 100% information from Arsal is that the high majority today in Arsal have reconsidered all of these stances, and they now sense a great burden posed by these armed groups, and they are in need of one who can assist them. I say to our people in Arsal, we are always ready to extend our hand of brotherhood, our hand of help, and to stand with you. However, the state must take its responsibility. Now, regarding the Arsal outskirts, the terrain, or the barren areas, so I advise everyone to put the issue of the people of Arsal, put it out of this auction, this political auction, sectarian auction. This doesn't make any difference for us. Say what you want. You are launching a campaign against us. This has been going on for a long time. I advise you, set this matter aside. Now, regarding the Arsal barons, if the state does not want to take its responsibility today, on the 24th of May, year 2015, just as I said on the 25th of May, 2 years ago, I believe, or more, in Majghara, regarding the issue of Qusair, and today we are in the Arsal Barrens, I say that our people in the Biqa and Baalbek and Hirmel, let me be clear, and say what you want. Accuse whomever you want, name whoever you want, say what you want. Our people in Baalbek and Hirmel, the honorable people, their tribes, their families, their political factions, and all of the individuals, they won't accept the continued presence of one terrorist or one takfiri in any part of the Arsal outskirts or the Biqa area and Biqa outskirts. And this decision, who does it protect, and first and foremost, it protects the people of Arsal, so that they are able to go to the outskirts of their village, they are able to go to their farms, because they are being prevented from doing so by the militants. This will enable them to live safe in their homes and to be restored once again, to be under the authority of the state. Number four, on the anniversary of resistance and liberation, we hold on to the golden equation: army, people, and resistance. The national army and the popular resistance and the popular support. And this equation, one of the most important results of the victory in May 2000 and the victory in July 2006, is this equation, which is today protecting Lebanon. What is protecting Lebanon today is this equation in confronting the Israelis and the Takfiris and in confronting any threat. Because those who were killed while they were fighting Israel were Lebanese generals and soldiers and the Mujahideen of resistance and the Lebanese people, and those who now for years have been killed in Beqa are the Lebanese soldiers and generals of the army and the Mujahideen of the resistance and the Lebanese people. This is the equation of victory. This is the equation of deterrence. Let's put it out of its Lebanese circle instead of cancelling it, and let's present it as an example for Syria. And Syria has begun with it for years. Let's present it as an equation for Iraq, and the Iraqis began with it 1 year ago. Let's present it as an equation for Yemen, and Yemen began with it 60 days ago. Let's present it also as an initiative and an equation for all the countries and the peoples and the armies who are threatened by dangers. Today, in Iraq, it's not enough to have only the army. We need the people also, and we need the popular resistance. We need popular mobilization, which must further expand to include everyone. We need the tribes, the Shia and Sunni tribes. We need all the sons of Iraq, from Kurds and Turkmens and popular forces. The army and people and resistance in Iraq dealt defeat to ISIL in Salah ad-Din and Diyala, and it can also deal defeat to 1,000 ISILs in Anbar and Mosul. In Syria, it's the same. The Syrian Arab Army and the popular resistance, represented by the popular forces and the popular support. This is what made Syria persevere until today in confronting this global war. In Lebanon, we had this victory. This very large American Saudi aggression on Yemen, it wasn't able to achieve any of its goals, because what is confronting this aggression is the Yemeni army and the Yemeni popular resistance and the Yemeni popular support. Today, we present this equation to all the peoples of the region in order to bring about victory, which we can certainly bring about if we have the knowledge, if you identify the issue correctly, if we have determination and take the stance and go onto the battlefield. Number five, regarding our experience with Israel, brothers and sisters, from 1967 until today, and especially since 67 years, from the first Nakba, 1948, for decades, and they succeeded, they aimed to divide the confrontation. The fight with Egypt is a Sinai Peninsula. Let's set Egypt aside by giving it the Sinai Peninsula. Our fight with Jordan is about, for example, these border areas. The fight with Syria is about the Golan Heights. The fight with Lebanon is about a border area. And the fight with the Palestinians is about the West Bank and the Gaza Strip. And unfortunately, they were able to divide up this war and this fight. And one of the reasons behind the Israeli success and their strength in this fight, which has been continuing for decades, is how they partitioned it. Today, I, as a Lebanese, if I want to help the Palestinians, I must speak about the legitimacy and the reasons, the ethics, because Lebanese will say, what do you have to do with the Palestinians? If I want to help the Syrians, they say, what do you have to do with the Syrians? If Iraqis want to help the Palestinians, they ask, what do you have to do, you Iraqis? What do you have to do with the Palestinians? Isn't this a culture which exists Who created this culture? America and Israel and the intellectuals in our Arab world, the media intellectuals, other intellectuals. So for this reason, Palestine today is still suffering from the Nakba, which began 1948, which took place in 1948, because there was an attack on the Palestinians. Even the West Bank, they say Gaza is one, the West Bank is somewhere else, refugees is another issue, East Jerusalem is yet another. When the battle was divided up, Israel defeated us in many wars and on many occasions today in confronting this danger, which is no less than the danger of Israel. The biggest illusion was, and still is, the biggest illusion is to believe in the battle being divided up, not one battle. For example, let the Iraqis solve their problem. And Syria, what do we have to do with Syria? Let the Syrians solve their problem. And Lebanon, what do we have to do with it? Let the Lebanese solve their own problem. And let the Egyptians in the Sinai Peninsula solve their own problem. Let the Yemenis solve their problem. Nobody has any business in this. Just the same as with Israel, let the Palestinians solve their problem. This is a strategic mistake, a historic mistake, a deadly mistake. Today, we call for unifying the front, yes. We cannot fight in a separate way, on separate fronts. Today, we call for unifying the front, yes. We cannot fight in a separate way, on separate fronts. I'll give you a clear example. If ISIL in Iraq, more than 1 year ago, if it was prevented from entering, it would not have been capable of seizing control of Mosul or Salah ad-Din or Diyala or parts of Kirkuk or Anbar. It would have had some influence in some cities, some villages, some places. However, when the whole world was silent to ISIL in Syria, okay, where did ISIL go? Because ISIL has a project. It went to Ar-Raqqa. Not because it doesn't want to seize control of Damascus. No, it has a project. What is required from it is to have to go ahead with a project. Ar-Raqqa, Deir ez-Zor, on the Iraqi-Syrian border, reaching up to Al-Hasaka and to parts of northern Aleppo, the northern Aleppo countryside. Oil, gas, and it was left alone. The whole world was watching. Turkey was watching. America was watching. Jordan. All of them saw what was taking place. ISIL was given an opportunity to sell oil, and its oil was sold for it. It was given the opportunity to get weapons, capabilities, and to possess tanks and military camps, and to bring hundreds of thousands of takfiris. It built itself in Syria, and in one strike, it took control of Mosul, Salah ad-Din, Diyala, and it threatened Erbil, it threatened Baghdad, and it took a large segment of Anbar. If ISIL had been prevented of seizing control of these areas in Syria, Iraq wouldn't have witnessed such developments. These are very painful images when we see tens of thousands of Iraqis who are leaving Ramadi, everyone with his mother, wife, children, carrying small bags with fear in their hearts. This is what happened. This is what happened to us. This is what happens to ISIL when we ignore ISIL. So what are we to do? We must look at in a unified way to this battle, and based upon this, brothers and sisters, our fighting in Syria, it's not only about a threat to Sayyida Zainab, and we went and protected Sayyida Zainab shrine, then Qusayr, and we went and protected Qusayr al-Fort, and then Qalamun, and we protected Qalamun. But now, for more than 2 years, it's no longer just about these issues. It's more, a lot larger. Today, based upon this vision, yes, we are fighting side by side with our Syrian brothers. We are fighting side by side with the army, people and popular resistance in Syria, in Damascus, or in Aleppo, or in Homs, or in Deir ez-Zor, or in Hasaka, or in Qalamun, or in Qusayr, or Idlib. We are fighting based upon this vision, and we consider that this is in defense of everyone, of Syria, of Lebanon, Iraq, Yemen, Palestine. It is in defense of Ramadi, in defense of Arsal, Baalbek, and Karbala, and Damascus, and Latakia, and Aleppo, and everywhere throughout our region. And our presence, this presence will increase. The more the responsibility requires us to be present, the more our presence will increase. Today, I stress on the anniversary of the victory of the resistance. I stress that our presence in Syria is based upon this strategic political vision, by this deep understanding and this clear identification and this correct stance. Hence, without any hesitation, yes, we're no longer in one place and not the other in Syria. We, today, we are present in many different places. And I say to you today, we will be present everywhere in Syria, anywhere which the battle requires. We are up to it. We are the men worthy of this mission, and we are capable of contributing together with the army and people and resistance in Syria. We are capable of achieving this victory and deterring this aggression. Number six. Because ISIL is now close at the doorstep of everyone, I call on Saudi Arabia to stop its aggression on Yemen and to facilitate the political dialogue anticipated in Geneva in a few days, and to seriously open the door for a political solution, a Yemeni political solution which ends this war and these sufferings. Number seven, I also call on the government of Bahrain to stop pinning its hopes on the despair of the Bahraini people, to stop hoping that the Bahraini people will stop its march, which will achieve victory, God willing, even if it's in the future, and to release the prisoners, first and foremost, the symbols and the ulama, and to stop these trials, just as we saw just a few days ago, the trial of Sheikh Ali al-Salman, and to reconcile with his people, because ISIL is close to all of you. You cannot deter this threat except by national dialogue, national reconciliation. Number eight, in light of everything taking place in the region, we here in the south, in South Lebanon, throughout this border, on the coastal areas, our eyes are on the main enemy in the main battle. On this front, we will never leave this front. And for everyone to be aware, some say if you have all of his capabilities, show it, reveal it all in Syria. No, we are obliged today to be present on two fronts, not to empty this front and not to turn a blind eye to this front. These two fronts complete one another. They are indeed one front, really, in their target. In this front, we will not empty this front. We will continue our efforts. We will be present. We follow up with intelligence. We monitor all of the movements of the enemy, its plans. We preserve our preparedness, our readiness. We are not preoccupied by other issues. Whatever the other issues may be, all of the intentions of the Zionist enemy, what it says, what it thinks, all of this is something which we are aware of. We are following all of these matters.